you know, you go into a casino and they've got, you know, speakers playing from all over, like a casino would. They've got music playing. They had a central speaker playing just the loudest music ever. I walked in, I go, am I at a nightclub right now? It was the crazy. I had never seen just a speaker in the middle of the casino floor playing music. It didn't feel like you were at a casino. Like, it just,
right.
Fake plants all over the place. That was the first time I was like, where am I?
Welcome once again to Low Rollers, the anchor leg of any good gambling industry podcast parlay. I am Eric Raskin, senior editor at CasinoReports.com and other fine websites. I thank you for joining me. I ask you to take a moment and give this podcast a 5-star rating. It's either that or I have to start charging everyone a per download tax. Coming up on the show this week, a first-time guest, a recent first-time contributor to Casino Reports as a writer, Mitch Malherbe, who brings interesting perspectives as a man who has made traveling to casinos his hobby. He recently visited his 500th casino, and he is a true low roller. So he'll join the pod shortly to give his takes on some of America's best and worst casinos, and to tell some stories of triumph and tilt. But first, my quick takes on not just one, but two news items from the past week. First, shout out to my colleague Jill Dorson for breaking this story on ingame.com Monday night. DraftKings and FanDuel both resigning from the AGA over contrasting viewpoints on prediction markets. The AGA has been fighting against prediction markets being able to offer sports bets, and DraftKings and FanDuel have both decided they're getting into the prediction market game, so something had to give. They were out of alignment, and DraftKings and FanDuel, following a public policy committee meeting in D.C. Monday, decided to terminate their AGA memberships. What really stands out to me in all this is the large gap in malleability between online-oriented companies, DraftKings and FanDuel, but also Underdog, Prize Picks, etc., between them and old-school casino companies like MGM, Caesars, so forth. And this has always been a hallmark of DraftKings and FanDuel. We see a chance for innovation, we're pouncing. We don't need to be 100% sure we're in the clear. We just think we're probably in the clear, so we're going to go for it. Whereas the entrenched casino companies, they aren't moving and risking their licenses and reputations unless they're 100% sure it's safe. And by then, it may be too late to compete. The difference in attitudes, it's a little like determining guilt in a criminal trial versus in a civil trial. DraftKings and FanDuel treat it like a civil trial. If it's better than 50-50 that this is legal, that's the standard we're working with. MGM and Caesars, for them, it has to be legal beyond a reasonable doubt, pretty close to 100% before they do anything. Honestly, if anything, it's a little surprising DraftKings and FanDuel waited this long while Kalshi was out building a lead on them in the prediction market space. But DraftKings and FanDuel are all in now, and leaving the AGA is the no-looking-back point. And now, one interesting question with the AGA that is right up the Low Rollers Casino Reports alley, as we are trying to cover the casino side a little more than the sports betting side of the gambling industry. Is the AGA going to be all that supportive of online casino legalization moving forward? Without DraftKings and FanDuel, a higher percentage of their membership is now old-school casino companies. The AGA was historically not in favor of online casino. They swung temporarily in that direction, but now I would suspect their position will swing back, which, it's not what online casino expansion hopes need, one more factor working against them. And one last thing on this topic, just a thought experiment to ponder. All the absolutely bonkers stuff happening in the gambling industry in 2025, is any of this happening if Kamala Harris wins the presidential election last November? I'm not going to say the split between DraftKings and FanDuel and the AGA is the most important bit of fallout from that election, but it is yet another piece of fallout from that election. Okay, the other topic I wanted to hit on very quickly, the NFL sending out a memo and pushing for new rules on what prop bets are allowed. I think regular listeners know my viewpoint and the viewpoint of almost anyone entrenched in the regulated gambling industry that whatever forms of betting you ban from the regulated market will still be available in the unregulated market. So the NFL pushing to ban, say, props on field goal attempts, that's one of the items in this memo. That is not the NFL trying to rid the game of sports betting related corruption. No, that's the NFL trying to prevent sports betting scandals. In other words, the negative public attention that comes with sports betting related corruption. That's what they want to weed out. This is all about perception. It is clear to me that the NFL's attitude toward game fixing is out of sight, out of mind. If player prop rigging is happening in coordination with an offshore sports book or an illegal bookie, and nobody catches it, did it really happen? As far as the NFL is concerned, not catching it, that's a win. Integrity is nice and all, sure, but image, that's what they're really looking to protect. Okay, let's get to this week's interview, which I think you'll find to be a nice change of pace. Please enjoy a few seconds of music, and when I come back, I'll be joined by Mitch Malherbe. It's been a whirlwind past few weeks for my guest on this episode. He recently visited his 500th brick-and-mortar casino, then made his Casino Reports writing debut, and now is making his Low Rollers debut. On Twitter and Instagram, you may know him as Casino Collective. In the real world, he's known as Mitch Malherbe. Mitch, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me on.
So I have a lot of questions to ask of a man who's been to 500 casinos, but let's start at the beginning. What was the first casino you ever went to? And then when did visiting casinos start to become a passion of yours?
Sure. So I've got a lot of really early memories going to casinos. And I went to high school in Oklahoma, and out there, the gambling age is 18. So we were able to go into the casinos in the area when I was a senior in high school. So I've got a lot of memories going to Windstar Casino, which is the world's biggest casino, and Riverwind Casino in the area, just with my friends and playing the slots out there. So that's kind of how it started. It really became a big hobby of mine, my passion, basically. When I was in college, I was playing a lot of blackjack, doing a lot of advantage play blackjack. And so I'd travel around casino to casino, and out there, the blackjack conditions are just, they're dismal. I mean, you have to pay 50 cents ante per hand, and you don't even get that back. That's just off the top. So trying to find a place that would waive the ante or eat the ante was really hard. So I just travel around the state of Oklahoma. I travel into Louisiana. I travel into New Mexico and try and find different casinos out there that had good blackjack conditions that did not charge the ante, that I could play longer and, you know, not get backed off. So that's really been the inspiration to my page. It started as an Instagram page and then a Twitter page, just so I could document the blackjack conditions and you know, my first experiences just off the top of my head, you know, how I liked it, what I liked, what I didn't like. And from there, it just became a passion of mine.
So I'm curious, you mentioning the gambling age being 18 in Oklahoma, and so you and your friends getting started in high school. Obviously, this is a topic of, you know, much discussion in the industry about, you know, what should the gambling age be, and is there higher risk of problem gambling at younger ages and all that sort of stuff. So what was sort of your experience as a high schooler going to the casino? Did you find that it was any harder for you and your friends to sort of gamble responsibly and control yourselves than it became when you were, you know, 21 and up?
It was easier back then, for me at least, than it is now. I wouldn't say that it's, you know, a problem at all, but back then I had like $40. I'd go in with $40. And once I spent through that, you know, I'm out of it. So we'd leave.
Right.
So it was a lot easier back then to not, you know, go above and beyond and have to take out money from the ATM just because I didn't have any money. I'd just go in with $40. And if I won, I won. And if I lost, I lost, whatever.
Right. That's, yeah, I mean, and that's sort of the first guide that anyone will give you to responsible gambling is set a limit. So you were basically, life was setting a limit for you on what you could possibly spend in a night.
Exactly.
And since you brought up going to the ATM, this was going to be a little lower down my question list, but I'll ask it now. As a guy who goes to tons of casinos, 500 of them, makes this your hobby, what is your maximum ATM fee that you are willing to pay? Do you have a point where if it's above a certain number or percentage, you're just like, nope, I am not paying that fee?
Well, it has to be reasonable. I typically don't go to the ATM. I'll bring in just, a few $100 cash. I never really gamble too much. But lucky for me, so I've got USAA banking and they waive the ATM fee. So that's really not something I ever notice. I would, if I didn't know, I wouldn't want to pay, I see them for like $7 or $8 in Vegas. So
Right.
I wouldn't want to do that. I mean,
Right.
it's unreasonable.
Right. Agreed. All right. So one thing I'm really curious about is you go on these trips pretty much every month, is it right? That you go on a trip to casino somewhere monthly, roughly?
Yes, sir. Yep. A month,
Okay.
every couple months or so, whenever.
Okay. So I'm curious, are you married? Do you have kids? Because this seems like the kind of hobby that's tough to maintain if the answers to those questions are yes.
I am married. My wife is great. She lets me kind of do whatever. She used to actually go on a lot of these trips with me, but it's a long day in the car and it's a long day of gambling, and gambling's not really her thing. So she's just like,
Okay.
yeah, go do it and have fun. She doesn't mind. I mean, she works a lot, I work a lot, so we've got some time to pursue our hobbies like this. So I'm married, no kids though, so I'm able to go do this.
Okay. Have you started thinking ahead to if and when kids enter the picture, maybe the monthly gambling trips are going to be a little harder to pull off?
It's going to be harder to pull off. We're happy as we are right now, so I'm taking it month by month and trip by trip.
Gotcha. All right, so let's do some best and worst as a man who's been to 500 casinos.
Sure.
I'm sure it's hard to pick just one from out of 500, but what is your number one all-time favorite casino if you had to pick one?
So actually, this is easy. It's South
Okay.
Point in Las Vegas. This is the most, it's my favorite casino. And it's a lot of people's favorite casino too. Whenever I post about it on X now, that my South Point post tends to get the most interactions, the most likes, the most comments. A lot of people saying, oh my gosh, this place is amazing. And it truly is. It's the last, one of the last, I guess, value-driven old school Vegas casinos out there where you get great comps, the table limits are reasonable, fantastic rules. Besides craps, I think it's only two times craps, so that could be better, but you still, I mean, it's $5 craps. Great restaurants. Actually stayed at the hotel there very recently, and it's fantastic room for very inexpensive price for what you're getting, and a great view of basically the entire city from my room. I can't get enough of that place. And there's a lot of people who share that notion with me.
Does it feel different as a value casino? Like, does it feel like this is not a fancy casino, or do they manage to pull off the feel of being in a first class casino while still keeping value for you as a player?
So that's an interesting question. And I think what they have going for them is that they're not trying to do the over luxury thing. They're not trying to be a brand new, modern, top of the line casino. They've got that old school classic feel that you get from, an older place, somewhere downtown, like a Golden Gate, that people love it because it's old and it's classic. It's kind of the same with South Point. It's not, overly luxurious or anything. You feel, but it's not gross. You don't feel like you're at a dive bar there. You feel comfortable,
Okay.
but it's a modest, comfortable place.
Okay. Now the flip side of the coin. Go ahead and be critical here. What is the worst casino you've ever been to, the place you're absolutely never going back to?
Well, that's a little bit harder of a question, but I think the worst casino I've ever been to is got to be Silver Nugget. And that I think it actually closed, so I don't have to worry about not going there again.
Smart play, smart play, yeah.
It's sad because it's a place with a lot of history. It's got a lot of Vegas history, but it's fallen into disrepair. At least it did in my last visit in like 2022 was the last time I went there. Fell into disrepair. It had a really cool front facade with like mirrors out front, and there were some of the mirrors that had been broken and were boarded up. It looked gross. It looked bad. They removed the table games. It was just not a fun place. It's in kind of a rough part of town, but it
So
wasn't a place I want to spend time.
all it had at that point was slots then?
Slots in a sports book, and there may have been something. I think it was just slots in a sport. I didn't spend a whole lot of time there, if you couldn't tell.
Right. Yeah, sounds that way. All right. Sort of a different one here. You could go in a lot of different directions with how you choose to answer this, but the most shocking casino, like you someplace you walked in and you were just like, "Where am I? What the hell is this?"
So I've got a couple. One
Okay.
was one actually going back to the last question was going to Silver Nugget. The first time I ever went to Silver Nugget, and they, you go into a casino and they've got, speakers playing from all over, like a, casino would. They've got music playing. They had a central speaker playing just the loudest music ever. I walked in, I go, am I at a nightclub right now? It was the cra I had never seen just a speaker in the middle of the casino floor playing music. It was bad. It felt like I was, it kind of felt like a newer church or like a daycare center. It didn't feel like you were at a casino. Like it just,
Right.
there were fake plants all over the place or an office building maybe. I, that was the first time I was like, where am I? What am I doing here? And I just went to Jerry's Nugget, which is it's close by. And I just came from Jerry's Nugget. And I honestly, I like Jerry's Nugget. It's in a similar part of town, but they're doing it right. And I went from there to Silver Nugget, and it wasn't it for me. I went in, took some pictures, which is what I do for my page, documented my stay, and promptly left. But I've really never had a good time there. I've only been there a couple times. And then my other one actually came recent. I just took a trip to Minnesota and Wisconsin. And I pulled up to the last casino of the day. My first day there was called St. Croix Casino at Turtle Lake. That was the biggest "what is this" moment ever. Because I pull up to the casino, and it looks like it's like a manufacturing building or like a warehouse or something. There's no indication that it's a casino other than this little sign along the street. It's actually a cool sign. It was lit up really nicely, but that's it. There was no entrance sign. I didn't know where to go in and go out. I got there around midnight or 1 a.m. So there wasn't a whole lot of people entering or leaving by that point. Very rural area. But I walk up. I was like, what is this? What am I getting into here? But I walk in and completely different place. It had a very, very cool inside. It was kind of dark. There was like taxidermied animals and canoes and like other miscellaneous items on the walls. It had a cool feel inside, and it had great table games. I played the double deck pitch game, which is my favorite game to play, where they pitch you the cards. But I walked in, I go, wow, this is actually incredible. So, first impressions were not great, but after that, just with the games and the inside of the place and just the overall everything about it, it's one of my favorite casinos in the area.
Okay. So you mentioned the double deck pitch game. That's a perfect segue into talking about specific games. Is blackjack your favorite casino game, would you say?
It is. I dabbled in the carnival games for a little while. I dabbled in face-up pie-gal poker. I'll play that if I'm feeling it. But 99% of the time when I walk into the casino, I'm going to go play blackjack. And I try and find a two-deck game or a one-deck game.
And do you also are you into the blackjack games that have some sort of side bet, or do you tend to enjoy those, or you kind of steer clear of those because it tends to be a long-term losing proposition?
I have played it every now and then. I'll play it if I'm with a buddy and I'm getting pressured into it. I'll put a dollar on a side bet. It's not my thing. It makes your money go really quickly. But they are a lot of fun to play. I've seen a lot of people. I've sat at blackjack tables and people will buy in for, $1,000 and play, $50 bets and lose that $1,000 within 5 minutes just because their side bets won't hit. So
Right.
it's for a lot of people. It's just not for me. I like to play the actual card game itself.
And then favorite non-blackjack game, you mentioned face up PyGow. Is that it, or is it something else?
It's I'm a little embarrassed. It's three card poker. I love playing three
Okay.
card poker, and I never play the side bets on that either. I just play the cards, which you're not going to make a lot of money, but it's just a fun giggle bet. That typically the limits are really small for three card poker. I'll only play if it's a $5 limit, and I can sit there with $100 and play for hours.
Okay. I've never played three-card poker, but I did have a phase like in my early 20s where I got kind of into let it ride poker, which is, in the same family, and I got some weird looks at the table for being the guy who didn't play the, I forget how they describe, whether it's not really a side bet, but whatever the bet that your first three cards pay something big. Like I was the only one who was just playing the regular bet so that I could, if I wasn't doing getting the cards I wanted, you pull back two out of three and I'm only losing $5 maximum per hand, kind of similar to your philosophy, but apparently they had never seen anyone not pay the extra five for the potential big wins.
Yeah, you would think, yeah, it's the same way for me. I'll play it and they're like, "You really? You're not playing the side bets? Are you kidding me?" I'm like, "No, I'm just gonna play the cards." It's the same
Right.
thing really with blackjack. They'll point out, like, if it's a trilux, they'll point out that I've got like a flush or a straight. I'm like, "Yeah, I don't feel like I lost anything because I never play
Right. You're fitting in right here on a podcast called Low Rollers, so that's good.
it." Perfect.
Do you ever play slots these days or only tables?
Only tables. I Slots are fun. I only play it if I've got free play from the casino. I'll get some good free play comps from MGM and I'll go play that there, but that's the only time I ever do it. You can make a good amount of money. I just like to feel like I've got a little bit of control of the game.
Right. All right, let's do some stories. Give me your greatest casino, any game, whatever it is, greatest victory story.
Sure. So it's an interesting question because, like I said, I don't really go in with a whole lot of money. I'll go in with $200 or $300. Since I bounce around from place to place on a lot of these trips, I don't really sit and play for 7, 8 hours anymore at a table. But back when I did, my greatest story happened when I was in grad school. I was 23 or 24 years old in Oklahoma, and there was this casino out there, very small casino. It had two or three blackjack tables and just slots, a bingo hall, and that's it. It's called Fire Lake Casino in Shawnee, Oklahoma. And I sat there for, I can't even remember, 9 or 10 hours. It was basically an entire day of playing. And one other guy was sitting there with me the whole time. There was a couple guys that were in and out, but one guy sat there for most of the time that I was there. And him and I both cleaned out the entire rack minus a couple $500 chips. I mean, they didn't have a
Wow.
whole lot in the rack to begin with, but just seeing there be no fives, no 25s, no hundreds left, it was an interesting thing, and I had never seen that before. And it was funny. I made up probably 30% of it. The other guy was betting a whole lot more, but just the fact that we could do that was it felt it was cool. It was a cool feeling. They had to stop the game and wait for a fill to come.
And that was one where you sat down with just $200 or $300 initially. Do you recall how much you walked away with at the end of all that?
I don't. It was a few $1,000s. It was a good day at the casino,
Right.
especially for me in college.
Right. Yes. And so with both of you guys winning, I guess it was just a case where the dealer was going bust an inordinate percentage of the time.
I'd never seen anything like it. The cards were falling in our favor. I mean, we would win, both of us would win basically the same hands, and we would win, it's been so long. We would win six or seven hands per every one that we would lose. I mean,
Wow.
I had never felt so unstoppable before. I was like, I got to stay here forever.
Was there finally a cold streak that convinced you to leave, or you just were so exhausted it was like 9 to 10 hours, I can't play anymore?
I was tired. I couldn't think
Okay.
anymore. And that was back when I was doing a lot of advantage play. So I'm counting cards the whole time. And I just my brain stopped working basically. I couldn't keep the count anymore. I couldn't keep the running count. I couldn't think. I couldn't have conversations. I mean, I had been up for a long time before that as well. So an hour and a half drive home. Let me just color up and go.
Okay. So you do consider yourself an advantage player then, that you will typically, when you sit down, you're trying to count the cards and find a little bit of an edge.
I do, but I don't. I'll keep the count. I'll keep the running count. I don't vary my bets as much only because the Casino Collective page, I don't want to get kicked out of the casino before I can create my content.
Okay.
And that had happened in the past, but now I'll keep the count when I'm playing. And I also, since I go to these places and I have to visit, well, I don't have to. I visit, 15 or 16 different casinos in a weekend. I don't have a whole lot of time at each place. So I'm not there long enough to really catch a good count of the deck or catch a hot deck. So I'll keep the count in my head, and that sometimes it just tells me, if it's super negative, be like, all right, well, I guess now is a good time to leave, if anything. So I'll vary my bets, not much, a couple units.
Reverse of your greatest story. What's your worst casino story, or maybe like the most extreme tilt you've ever been on? Is there one that stands out?
There is. Unfortunately, had a lot of losing games. Recently, this year, I was up in Reno and I was at the Club Calneva, and this is the most recent major on tilt game that had happened to me. And I feel like a lot of my bad stories happen in Reno, unfortunately,
Hmm.
which sucks. I really like Reno. But I was at the Club Calneva and I had lost the game before at Silver Legacy, and I went over to Club Calneva and I played, and I blew through. I was playing table minimum, or I don't remember. I was playing $10 or $15 the whole time. I wasn't even varying my bets. And I was just losing, losing, losing. I blew through $200 or $300 really without winning more than two or three hands. It was the most crazy bad luck streak I've ever had in my life. And I buy in for $300 more. I'm like, I'm gonna make it, I'm gonna make this all back right here. I put it all down for one bet.
Oh boy.
And dealer blackjack. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I walked out of the casino, but that was the most recent just single bad luck game. And like I said, I don't go in with thousands of dollars. So I don't ever leave. If I lose a couple hundred, $200 or $300, I'm like, ah, it sucks, but it's not going to ruin my day. But I did have a trip to Reno when I was in college. And I don't know how it was possible I didn't win a single game of blackjack there. I lost every game I played at. And normally, you'll win one, you'll win $25 here. You'll play for an hour and win $25. Not one. Busted out every single game. And
Wow.
that one just sticks out to me. Every single time I land at that airport, I'm like, God, 2019.
The full $300 on a single bet story is kind of, on the one hand, not a case of very good responsible gambling discipline,
No.
but on the other hand, I suppose you could say the fact that you, after that went disastrously, you got up and left instead of trying it again, little bit of sh showed some restraint on your part, because I think a lot of people after making that mistake would then be like, well, let's try $600.
Yeah, I that would have been catastrophic to the rest
Okay.
of the trip. I lost that and I was like, this isn't for me. I'm gonna go to a different place. Luckily in Reno, I mean, there you got a place next door. But the when that happens and I'm at like somewhere in New Mexico or something, and I've got an hour and a half or 2 hours drive to the next casino, that one stings a little bit more.
Right. So I'm in Pennsylvania, where we have legal online casino. You live in Texas, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so certainly there is no legal online casino there. I'm not sure in your travels, have you dabbled in online casino at all? And if so, any appeal for you?
No appeal. I've never done any online casinos. The only thing online I'll do is if I go up to my company's office is in DC, and so I'll go up to DC. I'll put bets in on my phone for sports just to give me something to do in my hotel room. But I don't do any sort of online casinos, online slots, online table games, or anything. To me, I would just rather go into the casino and put my money down, and it just feels more real. I feel like you don't get as much of a gauge of how much you lose when it's online and you're just betting, money from your bank account.
Right. Okay, let's wrap up with a little off the beaten path here. Obviously, you have a passion for gambling. I'm curious, what is your all-time favorite gambling movie?
Gambling movie. So it's very loosely a gambling movie. It's a
Okay.
classic of all time, The Hangover 1. It's an incredible movie. It's hilarious. It's got that little tiny part in it where they're counting cards at the end.
Right. The
Otherwise, it's
Rain
just
Man
a
scene, yeah.
exactly. Other at the Riviera. Otherwise, it's just a classic movie. I could watch it no matter how many times I'd seen it in the past.
I'm gonna throw a flag and say wouldn't call that a gambling movie, but it is a Vegas movie at least,
There
so
you go.
close enough. All right, and then all-time favorite movie, period. Doesn't have to have any connection to Vegas or gambling.
Well, it's a classic, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. That's a
Oh,
it's just
okay. It does have
it's
a
a good
Vegas
movie.
connection.
It's got a Vegas connection. Yeah, how could it
All right.
not? But yep, I could watch that all the time. It's a good one.
Okay. So I guess to sort of wrap up, maybe try and explain it to me, if you had to put it in a few sentences. What is it about casinos that you love so much? What can you put your finger on why this became the passion for you that it did?
So first and foremost, I am, and this is apropos of nothing that we've talked about before, I'm a collector. You can see I've got the chips behind me. It
Right.
really started a lot as me collecting a dollar chip wherever I went. And I was like, oh, this is cool. This is fun for me to collect. And it went from that to $5 chips and $25 chips and $2.50 chips and $2 chips. So the whole collecting aspect, going around and collecting a chip or a handful of chips from each casino that I visit to add to my collection, that was what really got me hooked. And then the fact that you could make a few bucks doing it, play blackjack, make a few bucks, add to my collection, and then the whole travel aspect of it as well, that sometimes these places are off the beaten path. My travels have gotten me to places I would have never gone. I would have gone an entire lifetime without going to. And then the third thing is just the environment of the casinos. There's nothing that beats, in my opinion, a casino in the on the Las Vegas Strip on a weekend. It's exciting, it's fun, it's exhilarating. I love the lights, I love the music. That was really, one of the things that got me hooked. And a lot of these places, they share similar characteristics of strip casinos.
All right, great stuff. And of course, people can follow along with your adventures on Twitter and Instagram, your Casino Collective. And then, of course, if anyone listening hasn't checked out your article that we ran on Casino Reports recently, that chronicles your trip up north to Minnesota, Wisconsin, that whole area. So really, really enjoyed having you write for the site and looking forward to more of that. And it was great talking to you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Really appreciate it, Eric. Great talking to you as well. Thanks.
Okay, my thanks again to Mitch. That was fun. Interesting guy. Glad to have him writing for us. So this is the point in the show at which I usually tell a little gambling story, but I don't have much interesting to talk about, aside maybe from the fact that I'm that idiot in the fantasy league who drafted Trevion Henderson way too high, then lost patience and dropped him at exactly the wrong moment. And my 16-year-old son picked him up and is enjoying all the benefits of Henderson finally getting the ball. So that kind of sucks, but it's hard to really expound further on that topic. So instead, I will use this closing comment to celebrate the gambling exploits of a friend of the show, my recent guest, Maria Konnikova, episode 38, if you're interested in going back and listening. Maria finished in first place in a $5,500 NAPT poker tournament in Las Vegas last week. She prevailed heads up over John Wozniak, whom you may recall from another recent second place finish when he took second to Michael Mizrachi in this past summer's WSOP main event and won $6 million. Anyway, congrats to Maria. She won $66,000 in change, the fourth biggest live tournament score of her career, pushing her over $1 million in live tournament winnings. Now, to make this less about Maria and more about me, I can vouch for the fact that it's a great feeling to win a poker tournament. I've done it a couple of times against similar field sizes, although not quite for as much money as Maria just won, not counting home games. I've won two tournaments in my life. The first was a $40 tournament at Bally's in Atlantic City, a casino that no longer exists. I think I won like 450 bucks for that one. It's mostly a blur. The only hand I remember was heads up at the end. I had basically a nut low hand. I had nothing. I was playing the board and I thought about bluffing, but I didn't have the stones. So we just checked it down and my opponent mucked his hand. So he gave away a pot that should have been his, or at least half should have been his. And I didn't show my cards because he was a big intimidating guy and I didn't want to piss him off. And like two hands later, I won the tournament. And then my other win was on a cruise ship. I won a $100 buy-in tournament for about $1,000. The only hand I remember there was early on at my starting table. I was kind of short stacked, went all in with pocket sixes. A guy called with king six. He flopped a king and I hit the case six on the river, and he was all pissed off about me sucking out, and I resisted the urge to tell him I'd gotten it in with the best hand, so that's not a suck out. Anyway, I won that tournament, and pretty much my entire win went directly into buying my wife a fancy watch at the cruise ship's jewelry store, which I think sends the message that I'm the kind of guy who would buy my wife all sorts of nice jewelry if not for the fact that I never have any money to spend. And after an anecdote like that, you don't need to be reminded what the name of the podcast is, but I'll tell you anyway, this has been Low Rollers, Small Stakes, and Hot Takes.